conversation that's coming, especially not today. I put Taylor through hell over this bullshit with Kai. The only thing I'm worried about now is giving her a perfect birthday. I know she's never had a serious boyfriend before, and I'm taking that to mean all the usual cliches are still new to her. That means flowers, an obnoxious number of flowers, an ecological massacre of flowers. At the florist in Hastings, I try to relay this request, which for some reason is more difficult than I expected.
"What's the occasion?"
the middle-aged woman asks. She's got a Vermont hippie vibe about her, and the whole place smells like a head shop. A flowery head shop. "My girlfriend's birthday." I walk around the store studying the pre-made arrangements and bouquets in the refrigerators. "I want a lot, something really big, or maybe several."
"What are her favorite flowers?"
"No idea. I feel like roses would be fine, but then I'm thinking maybe something more unique, less expected. What says, "I'm sorry I dumped you because I was afraid you wouldn't respect me anymore when you found out I was a liar and a criminal, but also it turns out I love you, so take me back, and sex with you is pretty fantastic, and I'd like to keep having it."
"Favorite colors?"
"Hell, I don't know. She wears a lot of black, gray, blue, except when she's teaching. Then it's the opposite. I feel like after 2 months of dating, I should know this. The hell have I been doing this whole time? Eating her pussy, mostly." Seemingly sensing my discomfort, the woman says,
"Well, she's a Taurus, so pink and green are usually a good bet. She'll appreciate something earthy, yet sophisticated and refined."
Hippie lady weaves about the store between displays of flowers, touching them all, tilting an ear to them as if she's listening for something.
"Snapdragons," she declares. "Foxglove and pink roses, with succulents. Yes, that'd be perfect."
I don't have the vaguest idea what those are, but I understand the word roses. "Sounds great. Something big," I remind her. The bell over the front door jingles as the hippie darts into the back room. I glance over my shoulder to see none other than Coach Jensen walk in. "Hey, Coach." He has a nervous aura about him, like the night of the family dinner. It's odd seeing him that way, when in the locker room or on the ice, he's a stone wall of confidence. I guess women do that to us. He lets out a heavy sigh.
"Edwards."
Yeah, relations haven't warmed since the infamous fire. I get it. During the off-season, Coach would rather not have to deal with his unruly band of misfits. Running into him around town is a lot like seeing your teacher at the mall during summer vacation. Once the season's over and the semester ends, they don't want to know us. "Here for Iris?" I ask. "Taylor told me she and her mom share a birthday." Which further supports my theory that Taylor is in fact the product of a Russian human engineering experiment to create some sort of super sleeper agent. She has neither confirmed nor denied.
"No," he mocks. "I just like to come in a few times a week to gather petals for my bubble bath."
I like to think sarcasm is Coach's way of showing he cares. Otherwise, this guy can't fucking stand me.
"You two got big plans?"
He turns his back, exploring the arrangements in the cases.
"Dinner in Boston."
"Well, you two kids be safe, and don't stay out too late. Remember, arrive alive."
"Don't be cute, Edwards. I still got a trash can with your name on it."
My asshole puckers right up when he says that. "Yes, sir." We stand around in awkward silence for a few minutes, both of us pretending to browse the tiny shop while we wait for the florist to return. I can't imagine what it must be like for Brenna's boyfriend, Jake. He's lucky they're in a long-distance relationship while he's playing pro for Edmonton, because Coach strikes me as the kind of man who might sit polishing a gun at the kitchen table when a guy comes over for his daughter. And then Brenna struts out the door after a kiss on his cheek with a pocket full of bullets. Iris was easy as far as meet the parents horror stories go. I mean, what's one little fire between family, right?
"What are your plans with Taylor?"
he barks, so abruptly I wonder if I've imagined it. "Dinner first, just the two of us, then meeting friends later at Malone's."
"Uh-huh," he says, then clears his throat. "Well, don't show up at the table next to us. You got it?"
"No problem, Coach."
Finally, the florist returns with a heaping armful of flowers and an enormous vase. Perfect. The damn thing is almost as big as I am. I'm going to have to put a seatbelt on it. Coach looks from the flowers to me and rolls his eyes. The arrangement is so enormous and cumbersome, I end up needing his help to get it out the door and to my Jeep parked at the curb. I've just got the flowers strapped into the front seat when across the street I see a face that doesn't belong. And he sees me. Shit. He waits for a couple cars to pass before jogging over to us. My heart's in my throat, and I'm seriously thinking of hopping in the driver's seat and peeling out. Too late.
Connor, he says, finally caught up with you.
Fuck my life. A glance at Coach.
Hey there, nice to meet you.
He offers his hand to Coach as they both look to me for a response. Coach Jensen, I say, feeling like I'm going to choke on my own tongue. This is Max Saban, my stepfather.
Great to meet you, Coach.
The thing about Max is, he's so goddamn nice all the time, I don't trust it. No one smiles that much. It's fucking weird. Anyone who's in a good mood that often is hiding something.
Connor's told his mother a lot about you. He really loves your program.
Chad, Coach says, introducing himself.
Good to meet you.
He slides me a questioning glance, which I can only take to mean he senses the awkwardness of this shit show and wondering why the hell is he getting dragged into more of my personal drama.
Connor's a great addition to the team. We're glad to have him coming back to us next year.
Ha, if only he knew. I can't bring myself to meet Max's eyes to read his reaction.
Well, I've got to get going,
Coach says, leaving me out on this floating ice sheet alone.
Nice to meet you, Max. Have a good one.
Coach strides back inside the shop, and I've got nowhere left to hide, or anyone to hide behind. When do you get in? I ask Max. I keep my tone casual because he's here now and I can't avoid him anymore. The last thing I want is for him to see me squirm. So I tamp down the anxiety. I got good at this when I was a kid, following Kai around through abandoned buildings and dark alleys. Getting into shit that scared me, all the while knowing I couldn't show weakness or I'd get my ass kicked. It's the face I put on every time I hit the ice, lining up against a guy ready to do battle. It's nothing personal, but we mean to cause some havoc. Pain is part of the game. If we didn't want to lose some teeth, we'd stay home and knit.
Just this morning, replies Max. I took the red eye.
Fuck me, he's pissed. In that quiet, waspy way. The softer they speak, the more your life is in danger.
Stopped by your place, but you'd already left.
I have early classes on Thursday.
Well,
he says, nodding at the diner a few storefronts away.
I was going to grab a coffee before trying you again later. Since we're here, will you join me?
Can't very well say no, can I?
Yeah, sure.
We grab a booth by the windows and the waitress comes around right away to fill our mugs. I don't even like coffee, but I drink mine too fast, too soon, scalding my tongue because I don't know what else to do with my hands and it stops my knees from bouncing.
Guess I should start,
he says. The second most obnoxious thing about Max is how he always looks like he just walked off the set of an early 2000s family sitcom. He's one of those perpetually cheerful dads with an upstanding gentleman haircut, plaid Oxford shirt, and a vest from an expensive outdoor brand. Not that you've ever seen the man hike. Maybe that's part of it. I can't take him seriously when he looks like a character from a show I never watched as a kid because we didn't have cable. Those dads who ruined us for the real men missing from our lives. Kids like me were raised on lies told by TV writers, fulfilling the fantasies of their own broken childhoods.
Obviously, I came out here because we haven't been able to connect on the phone,
Max continues.
I also thought perhaps this was a discussion we ought to have in person.
That's never good. Now I'm thinking I should have had this talk with my mom first. It's not outside the realm of possibility that, given my lack of cooperation, she had no choice but to leave me to Max's mercy. Cut off financially, no more school, no more house, set adrift on a raft of my own making.
I know we haven't had much communication over the years, Connor. I can take my fair share of the blame for that.
Not quite how I saw this beginning.
I want to start off by saying, while I certainly don't approve of the actions you took, I can understand why you made the choice you did.
What?
I know how at that age emotions get the best of us, and sometimes when outside pressure is applied to just the right spot, we make decisions and act out in ways we might never otherwise. You made a mistake, a big one. You lied. To me, yes, but more importantly, to your mother. I know from your first phone call how much that's weighed on you, and what I find encouraging is that, while it took quite a bit longer than we'd have liked, you admitted your mistake. Now comes the hard part, he says with a hesitant smile. Taking responsibility.
Have to say you're taking this better than I expected, I tell him. I wouldn't fault you for being more on the irate side of things.
I admit, my initial reaction was surprise. Maybe a little irate came later. Then I thought back to what I was up to when I was 19.
The waitress comes back to refill our mugs, and he takes a long sip of coffee. As I'm left to guess what sort of trouble Max might have found for himself at Briar in his day.
Point is, I wanted to say that we're all entitled to a few fuck-ups.
I crack a smile at hearing him curse. It's like the first time you realize that Full House Dad also did the raunchiest stand-up comedy.
I'm glad you told us the truth, Connor. And as far as I'm concerned, we can all move on from the matter.
That's it? Seriously?
Well, your mother can't very well ground a 21-year-old man from the other side of the country, he says with a grin.
This feels like a trap. I thought you guys would pull me out of school, or at least stop paying tuition.
That would seem counterproductive, don't you think? How does interrupting your college education serve as a constructive punishment?
I assumed there'd be some instinct to cut me off, financially. It'd be more than fair considering what I did to him. The fact is, my entire livelihood is wrapped up in Max's bank account. He supports all of us. It's not a stretch to think he might reconsider that arrangement.
Connor, perhaps there's some kind of wisdom in telling you to go find a job and work 80 hours a week to still not make enough to pay rent and finish school, if you were someone else. But nobody needs to tell you how tough it is out there, or the value of a dollar, least of all me.
He sets down his mug.
You and your mother have experienced enough hardship. It wouldn't sit well inflicting any more, and the truth is, whatever cash value your mistake cost is an insignificant sum compared to the value I place on this family.
I don't know what to say. Max has never spoken to me like this before, either about family or the way Mom and I lived before he came along. I'm not sure we've said this many words the entire time we've known each other.
I didn't know you felt that way. Family is the most important thing in my life.
He stares into his mug, and his demeanor changes, a solemnness descending over his face.
You know, my dad died when I was at Briar. It was difficult for me, but more so for my mother. After that, it was only the two of us and all the empty places where Dad wasn't. When someone dies, everything becomes a memory of them not being there. Holidays and special occasions, you know? Then Mom died while I was in graduate school, and I got twice as many empty memories.
Something tightens in my chest. Regret, maybe? A sense of kinship. It never occurred to me the ways in which Max and I might be similar. I mean, there's a big difference between a runaway father and a decent one who dies too early, but both of us know what it's like to watch our mothers struggle and be helpless to fix anything.
What I'm trying to say is, when I met your mother, I had the utmost respect for how much she'd accomplished in raising you on her own, and I sympathized with how difficult it must have been for you. When Naomi and I married, I promised my first job would always be to take care of both of you, to make sure, as best I could, this family was a happy one.
His voice softens slightly.
I know I haven't always lived up to that promise where you and I are concerned.
To be fair, I said, I never gave you much of a chance. From the start, I saw Max as some tool in suit, someone I'd never relate to, so why bother trying? I figured you came from my mom and I was the unfortunate compromise. Because you were from such a different world than us, you just saw me as a loser kid who wasn't worth the effort.
No, Connor, not at all.
He pushes his coffee mug aside and sets his elbows on the table. He's got a certain magnetism about him, I can't deny that. I feel like when he sits across a boardroom from someone, they can't help but believe whatever he's selling them will make them rich.
Listen, I came into this thing with zero idea how to do it well. I wasn't sure if I should try to be a father to you or a friend, and I failed at accomplishing either. I was so afraid to assert myself too much in the middle of you and your mother that maybe I didn't make enough of an effort to build a relationship with you.
I didn't make it easy for you, I admit. I figured if you couldn't stand me, then I could be just as good at hating you. I think maybe... I swallow hard, averting my eyes. I didn't want to get rejected by another dad, so I rejected you first.
Why would you think that?
He sits back, appearing genuinely surprised. I mean, look at us. We're nothing alike. Well, that might be a little less true now that I know we have some things in common, but still, I can't imagine he'd have much use for me if I were a stranger off the street. I know you have this idea in your head that I should be more like you, take an interest in business and finance, work at your company and follow your path, but honestly, that bores the hell out of me. It drains the joy from my entire being to even think about it, so I'm left with this feeling that I'm never going to be good enough. I avoided your calls this week because I was embarrassed and I didn't need confirmation that everything I'd feared about myself was true. I slouch in the booth, hands in my lap, wanting to shrink into the space between the cushions and live with the dust. At least it's out now. Whatever there is after this, it won't be as humiliating as this moment. It can't be. Max is quiet a long time. I can't read his reaction, and in each second that passes, I take his silence as agreement. I don't even blame him. It isn't his fault he estimates success differently than I do. We're just different people. And trying to measure either against the other is pointless. I'd feel better if we agreed to stop trying.
Connor, he says finally, I should have said this a long time ago. You have never not been good enough. I've never seen you as anything less than a funny, charming, intelligent kid who is becoming a remarkable young man. You're right. There's a paternal part of me who likes the idea of being a mentor to you, a role model, to bring you into the company and teach you to take over when I'm gone. If that's not where your heart lies, I respect that. I probably should have taken the hint a little sooner, huh? But whatever you choose to do with your life and career, your mother and I will support you, as a team, as a family, because we know you'll make the right decisions for you. If I can help, I'm glad to. Otherwise, he says with a self-deprecating laugh, I'll stay out of your way. In either case, I want you to know I'm exceedingly proud of you.
I laugh weakly. Come on now, let's not get crazy here.
I'm proud of you, he repeats, reaching into his pocket to pull out his phone.
I watch suspiciously as he goes to a website that has a photo of him sitting at his desk, one of those corporate PR shots. Then he places the phone on the table between us and zooms in. Behind him, beside all the awards and plaques, is a framed photograph of my mom and me. My breath hitches slightly, and I hope he doesn't hear it. The picture is from their honeymoon, a couple days after the wedding. We all went to Hawaii. And on our last night there, Max took a photo of us watching the sunset. I'd never left California before that. Never been on a plane. I was in a shit mood the whole time because they were doing couple stuff and I had no one to hang out with. But that evening on the beach with my mom was my best memory from the trip.
I've always been proud of you, Max says gruffly as my eyes begin to sting. I'll always be proud of you, Connor. I love you.
Well, shit, I say, coughing to clear the rocks from my throat. Guess I'm the asshole. He laughs while we both discreetly rub our eyes and make other manly guttural noises that are absolutely not crying. Not sure what to say now, I admit. Sort of feels like shit that we spent all this time being weird around each other. I'm not about to be the guy's best friend or start calling him dad, but the last few years would have been a hell of a lot easier if we'd had this conversation sooner.
Cheesy as it sounds, I'd appreciate if we can start over, he says. Try to be friends.
There are worse things. Yeah, I could do that. I'm about to suggest we order some grub, but then I remember I've got a large child's worth of flowers drying out in my front seat and some more errands to run before I pick up Taylor for our date. How long are you staying in town? I ask.
Planning to head back tomorrow morning. Why, what's up?
Well, it's my girlfriend's birthday tonight, and we've got plans with her friends. But if you don't mind sticking around a bit longer, maybe the three of us could have dinner tomorrow night? I was talking to Mom about my girl coming to visit me in California this summer. Max's face breaks into a wide smile that he then tries to smother as he nods.
Not a problem. I can change my flight. You just let me know where and when. I'd love to meet her.
I can't help thinking Taylor would be proud of me right now.
37. Taylor. Connor is up to something. There's a definite sense of mischief about him. Nothing he said exactly, just more of a vibe I'm getting. He texted this morning to wish me a happy birthday and tell me to get dressed up this evening, which is unusual since lately he's been more concerned with getting me undressed. Then he dropped a hint that he wouldn't be able to meet me after class because he had special errands to attend to. Whatever he's got planned for our date tonight, I have a feeling he's gone completely overboard. And I can't say I'd be mad at him. Truth is, I've never had a boyfriend on my birthday before, so I'm sort of looking forward to getting the full Hallmark movie treatment television promised me. More than anything, I'm excited about the prospect of Connor and me making memories. Of course, getting dressed up requires a consultation with my beauty advisor. I text Sasha as I'm leaving class. Me, hot date tonight. Do my face? She gives good face. One of her many shifting career aspirations over the last couple of years has been to work as a makeup artist, at least as a way of supporting her music interests. And if that whole supervillain thing doesn't work out, by the time I reach my street on the walk home, she texts back. Her. Why bother? Just going to ruin it sucking Connor's dick. Her. JK, just got home. Come on over. Me. LOL. You said come. Her. Mind out of the gutter, dirty girl. Me. You started it. I add a string of nonsensical but contextually explicit emojis, then pick up my dress from my apartment and take an Uber to Greek Row. I do need to get better at balancing my time. Being totally absorbed in a couple cocoon has been fun, but I don't want to neglect my friends, Sasha especially. More than anyone else, she has supported me through the rough spots over the last few years. I probably would have had a total nervous breakdown and set my hair on fire more than once if it weren't for her. But lately, I feel like I have no idea what's going on in her life, which is a sign that I've been taking more than I've given. Major friendship no-no on my part. I need to change that ASAP. The weather's finally warming up, which means the typically quiet lawns of Greek Row on a weekday afternoon are more active. Porches are dotted with people studying. A few lounge chairs in the grass contain girls working on their tans for summer vacation. At the Sigma frat house, guys are playing beer pong in the driveway. I don't pay much attention to their shouts and catcalls as I slide out of the Uber and plant my feet on the sidewalk. The frat boys shower me with unimaginative variations on "show us your tits," the typical garbage girls get from that house. Then something catches my attention.
Hey, superstar, can we get a picture? Can I have your autograph? Where do I sign up for the live cam?
That sounds specific. quite oddly so. I keep my eyes straight ahead and don't slow down as I hurry up the front path of the Kappa house. The best defense is not giving them the satisfaction of a response. Mulling it over, I chalk it up to a dumb joke. Abigail's boyfriend likes to call me a fat Marilyn Monroe, so I assume that's what the whole superstar give me your autograph junk refers to. Well, he and his douchey Sigma brothers can fuck right off. I happen to know that some men like curves, particularly men named Connor Edwards. I can barely keep the smile off my face as I walk into the house. I can't wait to see him tonight. I don't know exactly when it happened, but I'm so gone for that guy. Just the thought of him makes me want to giggle like a preteen with her first crush. Upstairs, Sasha has a beauty station set up for me at her desk when I enter her room. I toss my bag on her bed and hang my dress on the closet door. "You're the best," I inform her. "Obviously. Go ahead and wash your face," she says as she flips through eyeshadow palettes. "Hey, I just want to make sure," I call out, standing at the sink in the shared bathroom that connects with the bedroom next door. "There isn't a surprise party scenario in play, right?" "Not that I know of." I rinse and pat my face dry with a washcloth. When I return, Sasha has me sit at her desk, then proceeds to smear me with moisturizer. I only ask because I think Connor feels like he has something to prove. So when I said we were just going to have a low-key hang at Malone's, I wouldn't be shocked if he spun that into some major event. "I don't think so." She hands me a tiny electric fan to dry my face. Next comes the primer, which Sasha is always telling me to add to my makeup routine, and I always tell her I would if I ever wore makeup, except when she does it, which is why I don't need to buy makeup products because I have her. It's a perfect system. When we're old, she'll live next door and I'll roll over in my wheelchair to get ready for my hot dates down at the bingo hall. "What about you?" I ask while she starts on my foundation. "How'd things go with Eric at the gala after I left?" "Not bad." I wait for her to elaborate. When it becomes clear she has no intention of doing so, I know there's more to the story. "So, you banged his brains out in the walk-in freezer, didn't you?" "That's unsanitary," she says. "Let him eat you out under the silent auction table?" "Those donations are for the children, you degenerate." Sasha is a tough nut. She considers the meddling in the private dramas of others an Olympic sport, but she's fiercely private about her own life. It's one of the qualities I most respect about her. She's good at setting boundaries and standing up for herself, something I aim to get better at. However, those boundaries don't apply to me, as far as I'm concerned. "You're in love with him, and you've already eloped and gotten married in Reno, I guess." "Actually, in my bag, there's a pair of bloody stilettos. If you could dump those over a bridge the next time you head into the city, that'd be super." "Come on. I'm not asking for the gory details, just an update." I mock pout. I've been feeling left out, and I need a Sasha recap. She rolls her eyes, smirking as she tells me to close my eyes while she applies shadow. "The gala went well. We've had a few dates since then." "Okay. This is good. He seems like a nice guy. Attractive, charming." Sasha is famously picky and gets the ick the way some people catch colds. I can't remember the last time she went on more than two dates with anyone. "I like him," she continues. "Yeah? I think I like his sister more." "Damn." This is, I hate to say, not the first time that's happened, and it never ends well. "Yep." The dilemma is evident in her voice, a sort of resignation to the injustice of her life. "I really need to start making all potential partners run through a slideshow. If they've got attractive siblings, that shit is a non-starter. I'm only fucking with the acorns falling from the ugly trees." "Is she into girls?" "Don't know," Sasha says. "Like a 60-40, yes, but they live together, so damn." "Yep." "So what are you going to—" Before I can finish, Sasha's bedroom door flies open and bangs off the wall. We both jump, startled. "Yo, what the fuck?" Sasha shouts.
What did you do?
Rebecca is standing in the doorway, her face red and puffy as tears stream down her face. She's shaking, teeth clenched, visibly enraged.
What the hell did you do?
Bitch, I have no idea what your problem is, but not you, her. Finger pointed at me, Rebecca charges into the room holding an iPad.
Did you know about this? Why would you do this to me?
She's hysterical, terrifying even. The first place my mind goes is that this has something to do with Connor.
What have I ever done to you?
She yells.
What is wrong with you?
I stand up, Sasha coming up behind me with a hairbrush like she might have to put her down. Rebecca, I say evenly, I don't know what you're talking about. If you explain,
look at this!
There's an audience now. Kappas are gathered in the hallway and peering out of their bedrooms to watch. Rebecca lunges forward and holds up her iPad in front of my face. The browser's open to a porn site and a video is queued up. Even before she hits play, my stomach sinks. I can tell just by the still image on the screen what she's about to show me. The kitchen of the Kappa house. It's dark. Night outside. The only illumination comes from fairy lights strung up across the ceiling and flashlights the sisters flicker and strobe around us, meant to disorient our overtired eyes. The room is draped in tarps and plastic sheeting to protect the walls and floors, like a scene from a bad sorority row horror movie. The senior members of Kappa Chi stand in a circle around six of us, dressed in nothing but white tank tops and panties. It's pledge week. Freshman year. Abigail stands beside me. Both of us are shy and terrified, questioning why we'd thought any of this was a good idea. Exhausted because by then we'd been awake going on 30 hours. Time spent doing laundry for the sisters, escorting them to and from classes, cleaning the house, and being subjected to six straight hours of character proving because they're not allowed to call it hazing anymore. All of which culminated in this scene. One of the seniors orders the six of us pledges to take body shots off each other in a line, then picks up the garden hose they fed in the side door from the yard and sprays us with it. We cower and tremble, spitting up water, soaked to the bone. Then another sister points to me. Dare or dare. Shivering, I wipe water and hair from my eyes and say, dare. She smirks. I dare you to make out with... Her attention first lands on Abigail, but knowing the two of us were probably the closest of this pledge class, she opts for a greater embarrassment factor. Her eyes slide to my right. Rebecca. With a nod of agreement to simply grin and bear the terribly unsexy episode of kissing while feeling like a couple of drowned cats, Rebecca and I turn to each other and kiss. No, I said make out. Like you fucking mean it, pledges. Fuck her mouth. So we do. Because more than anything, pledge week breaks down your sense of self-preservation, your will. By that point, our responses were almost automatic. They say jump, we learn to fly. So there it is. On the internet, for horny dudes to wank it to. Me and Rebecca, hot and heavy, our clothes soaked through and practically transparent, tits and vag out on full view. And it goes on for much longer than I remember. So long, I assume it must be looped until it finally ends and I look up at Rebecca, who's still sobbing. Not in anger anymore, but humiliation. The video has thousands of views in just a few hours. Already, it's spreading. To Kappa, to Greek Row, the entire campus. And the only person who could have uploaded it is in this house. 38. Taylor. I'm going to be sick. The thought reaches my brain well after my stomach spasms and vomit rises in my throat. I bolt for Sasha's bathroom and barely make it to the toilet before I choke on the hot liquid filling my mouth. I hear the bathroom door shut while I'm rinsing my mouth out and assume it's Sasha come to check on me. Instead, I turn around to see Rebecca sitting on the edge of the bathtub. She's composed herself, face still red, eyes puffy. Her tears have dried. In their place, a frozen image of resignation.
"So it wasn't you," she says dully.
I wipe my face, smearing the makeup Sasha had just applied.
"No. I'm sorry I accused you like that."
Closing the lid of the toilet, I sit down, still trying to get my own heart rate under control. Hurling did a lot to temper my panic, but the longer I'm upright, the faster the thoughts rush back to the surface.
"I understand," I say.
If I'd been the first of us to see the video, I'm not sure I would have reacted any better. Maybe not charging through the house screaming, but certainly suspicious. Fact is, Rebecca and I have never been friends. She was the shyest of our pledge class back then, and after pledge week, we hardly spoke again. Not for lack of trying on my part. It just always seemed when I walked into a room, she found her way to the other side. Now, something's changed. Besides the obvious, I mean. She sits there looking at me, defeated. Like all this time, she's tried to outrun me and her knees finally given out.
"My parents are going to kill me,"
Rebecca whispers, hanging her head. She sighs. A big, burdened release, as if rather than fearing the consequences, she's almost relieved to accept them. "They wouldn't really blame you for the video getting out, would they? They have to understand it's not your fault."
"You don't get it."
Her fingernails dig into the folio cover on her iPad, leaving crescent shapes in the fake leather.
"My parents are ultra-conservative, Taylor. They hardly associate with anyone outside their church. My dad didn't even want me to pledge a sorority, but I convinced my mom that Kappa was basically like joining a Bible study group. She said they hoped it would teach me how to be a proper young lady."
A frown touches my lips. What does that mean? It's hard to imagine my own mother ever going on a parent kick, trying to tell me what to do. I think the last time she told me to clean my room was when I lost the class ferret somewhere in the month-old laundry pile.
"I had my first girlfriend in 8th grade,
Rebecca says, meeting my eyes.
"We were only together for a couple of weeks when a girl caught us kissing in the band room and told her mom, who went to church with my parents. My dad bullied my girlfriend's parents until they finally pulled her out of band and got her transferred out of any classes we had together. We were forbidden to see each other."
She shakes her head bitterly.
"Every summer after that, my dad sent me to Bible camp, started setting me up with boys from church, usually some gay kid who was just as mortified and depressed to be forced to kiss a girl in painfully staged date pictures. By the time I graduated high school, though, I'd convinced them I was reformed. I could be trusted again. I figured living in a sorority house would at least keep my parents from dropping in whenever they felt like it to snoop through my room or hide cameras in my walls."
"Shit, Rebecca. I had no idea. I'm sorry." She shrugs. A sad grin makes a fleeting appearance, then vanishes.
"I'm sorry we never became friends."
"No, I get it." I bite my lip. "I can't pretend to know how you feel, but I get it. A lot of us are trapped in our own lives, told we're made wrong, deficient, as if being ourselves is somehow an affront to society. Some of us are constantly beaten with a stick of conformity until we learn to love the pain or give up altogether. I still haven't figured my way out of that trap. Yet there's nothing worse than when it's your own family on the other end of that stick, which pretty much makes Rebecca the strongest person I know, and one hell of an ally.
"So what are we going to do?"
she asks quietly. My teeth dig harder into my lip. "Only a Kappa could have shared that video."
"Agreed.
I have a pretty good idea who." I don't remember who was holding the phone. One of the seniors, I'd guess. Except for rituals, all pledge activities were recorded for posterity. The real question is, who had access to the video? I've never seen any footage from mine or another pledge week, aside from the highlight reel that always runs at the first dinner after confirmations. It makes sense. The person who would have control over that archive is the president. And her VP. Downstairs, Rebecca and I confront Charlotte in the lounge. She's alone, curled up in a high-back chair with her laptop open and her headphones on. Considering the commotion a few minutes ago, I would have expected her to have circled the wagons, as it were. "We have to talk," I tell her. Charlotte pushes one of her headphones off one ear, lifting an irritated eyebrow without looking up from her screen. "What?" "We need to talk," I repeat.
"Do we?"
"Yes," Rebecca insists. Charlotte's gaze remains on the laptop. Lately, she's completely checked out. She's graduating, and Abigail was named her successor, so there's not much left for Charlotte to do than hand over the keys and pose for a photo that'll hang on the wall with the other former presidents. We've all noticed the change in her attitude in that regard. Full-on senioritis. "Charlotte!" I snap. Rolling her eyes, she slides the headphones off and shuts her laptop.
"Fine. What is it?"
"This." Rebecca shoves her iPad in Charlotte's face and presses play again on the video. At first, Charlotte appears bored, confused, glancing at us for an explanation. Then I watch the realization dawn on her. She scrolls down to read the comments, scrolls up to look at the website name at the top of the page. Her startled eyes dart up to ours. "Who posted this?" she demands, fire in her voice. Charlotte Cagney is a force to be reckoned with, which is why she was elected president in the first place. Everyone voted out of fear of what would happen to all those who opposed her. No one dared run against her. "We came to ask you that," I say pointedly. "You're saying you don't know? This is the first I'm seeing of this." She shoves her laptop to the side and stands. "I just got back from graduation rehearsal and was trying to study for finals. How did you find this?" Rebecca's lips tighten.
"I just got home and found Nancy and Robin watching it in the kitchen."
"Sigma has seen it too," I add, "so you can bet it's all over campus by now." I see the sudden change in Charlotte's eyes, from small kitchen fire to scorching inferno. She shoves the iPad at Rebecca and storms out of the room, still talking as if she hasn't left us in her dust.
"Get everyone to the blue room," she says, then shouting, "House meeting, motherfuckers!"
Charlotte tears up to the second floor and starts banging on doors. "Everyone downstairs now!" Then back down and through every room. Beth and Olivia are with a group in the TV room, their backs turned, when Charlotte launches a banana at their heads.
"Blue room, get up!"
I have no idea where she picked up the projectile banana. Rebecca stands somewhat behind me once we've all gathered in the blue room. We wait a few minutes, everyone staring at each other, bracing for impact, while the last stragglers haul ass back to the house for the meeting. Abigail then takes the roll to confirm we're all here before Charlotte begins. My eyes meet Abigail's from across the room. I try to read her for any hint or tell, but she's impassive.
"All right. It's come to my attention that there's a video going around."
Charlotte's glare lands on Nancy and Robin, who at least have the decency to look contrite. "And apparently, none of you thought it appropriate to make your house president aware of this severe breach of trust and privacy." Sasha works her way through the room to stand with me and Rebecca. She slips her fingers through mine, and I squeeze her hand, grateful for her presence.
"Robin, what's the first tenet of the Kappa Creed?" Charlotte demands.
Chewing on her thumbnail, a nervous Robin stares at her feet.
"I will protect my sister as myself."
Next, Charlotte turns her blazing ire on the sister who's turning beet red.
"Nancy, what's the second tenet of the Kappa Creed?"
Nancy tries to speak, but only air comes out. Then, voice shaking,
"To act with honor and integrity."
"Yeah,"
Charlotte says, pacing the room like she's got a loaded pistol.
"That's what I thought.
But apparently, some of you have forgotten that. So I want to know who the sister fucker is. Who is the selfish little shit who stole a private video from the Kappa archive and uploaded it to a porn site? A shocked silence crashes over the room. It becomes evident then who had still been in the dark. Questioning eyes begin scanning the room, factions trading accusatory glances. I spot more confused faces than I expected. I guess I figured every girl in the house had already seen the video and was laughing about it behind our backs. But other than Nancy and Robin, I pick out only a few other girls who I suspect might have known. Naturally, my examination of Abigail lasts the longest. A deep groove has cut into her forehead, but I'm not sure what it means. Is she stunned? Baffled? Her green eyes keep sliding around to study the faces of our sisters, searching for the culprit or looking for allies. Nope. Uh-uh, Charlotte says, wagging her finger. Don't go quiet on me now. Your big girl ass thought this was a good idea. You can't walk that shit back now. Someone's going to confess, or we will sit here all night. All day. Until the end of fucking time, until one of you little brats tells the truth. Abigail just stands there, arms crossed, not saying a word. I can't stand it any longer. Abigail, I call out, and the oxygen is sucked out of the room. Have anything to say? She flinches. What's that supposed to mean? Well, I'm just checking my watch and, oh, look, it's Spiteful Bitch 30, so maybe you have something to add to this conversation. Sasha's eyes go wide as she turns to me in slow motion, staring at me as if I've grown a second head. And maybe I have. This one's fed the fuck up. You're accusing me? Abigail's voice jumps two octaves as her face crinkles in denial. I didn't have anything to do with it. Really? Because you're the only person in this room who's made it her unending mission to ruin my life, so only two people have the password to the server where the archive is stored, Charlotte says, her attention now trained on Abigail. You're the other one. I didn't do it! She tosses her hands up, pleading. I swear. Okay, I admit there's a beef there, but I would never upload revenge porn of another woman. Even a woman you hate? I snap back. Abigail drops her hands. For the first time in years, she looks at me with sincerity. Not even my worst enemy. That's not who I am. Silence falls over the room. My gaze remains locked with the platinum blonde who's made my life miserable for so long. Fuck me, but I believe her. Then who is it? I challenge. Who wanted to humiliate me? Because I know this was about me. Rebecca and I might have remained obscure to one another since freshman year, but I can't think of anyone who even mildly dislikes her enough to humiliate her like this. The target had to be me. I have the password saved on my phone, Abigail says, growing visibly anxious. If someone broke into my phone... I'm not sure she means to do it or is even consciously aware when her gaze slides to Jules, who's trying to blend into a potted plant at the back of the room. When Jules realizes she's been singled out, she reveals a panicked expression that is quickly overcome by betrayal. Did you hack my phone? Abigail asks her best friend, a note of horror in her tone. At first, it appears she might deny it, but then the pretense falls. Jules huffs, rolls her eyes. It was just a joke, okay? They both had their clothes on. What's the big deal? Abigail's jaw falls open. Why? She demands. Why would you ever do something like that? Jules offers a shrug, her body language trying to downplay it all. The other night, remember? Kev said something like, I wonder how many views Taylor's tits would get on Pornhub. So later, I was over at the Sigma house visiting Duke, and Kevin was there. He and I were talking, and I was like, well, I can totally get a video of her tits. And the next time you left your phone out, I tried a few passwords until I got it unlocked. Jules shakes her head defiantly. Like it wasn't a big thing, just a dumb prank. Why is everyone getting so bent out of shape? Christ, Jules, Would it kill you to grow a mind of your own? Fuck off, Sasha. Taylor started it by kissing Abigail's ex. She's the sister fucker, and she would have left Kappa by now if she didn't have you always fighting her battles for her.
You're a real cunt, Jules. You know that?
My eyes widen because that one came from Rebecca. Oh, stuff it up your cooch, Rebecca. If anyone wanted to yank it to a 10-year-old boy, they'd become a priest.
All of you shut up,
Charlotte shouts. She closes her eyes, massaging her temples like a mother just before she blacks out and smothers her new baby in its crib.
I call for an emergency vote.
I frown at Abigail's declaration. I look over to see her nudging Olivia beside her, who seconds the motion even though she hardly seems to understand why. Charlotte gives a slow nod.
Okay, call your vote.
All in favor of revoking Jules' membership in Kappa Chi sorority and evicting her from the house, raise your hands.
Wait, what?
For some reason, I assumed Abigail would protect Jules and Charlotte would protect Abigail. I'd been the sorority punchline for so long that I forgot about all my old hopes and dreams of sisterhood, of having close friends to support me and watch my back. But Abigail's declaration brings some unexpected redemption to the Kappa House, as everyone bands together during the vote. Rebecca's hand is the first up, followed closely by Lisa, Sasha, Olivia, and Beth. More hands rise, each encouraged by the growing majority, until finally, my hand goes up.
Good. It's unanimous, Charlotte says with a nod. Julianne Munn, by unanimous decision, the membership of the Briar Chapter of Kappa Chi have lost faith in your commitment to our shared tenets of sisterhood, and you are hereby excommunicated and banished from the grounds.
Our president pauses, staring at Jules when she doesn't respond.
Well, get the fuck out.
Are you shitting me? This isn't fair, Jules argues, looking at Abigail to save her.
She searches the room, shocked and dejected when no one comes to her rescue.
Seriously? Fine. Fuck you all. Have a nice life.
Jules storms up the stairs to her room while the rest of the sisters sit dumbfounded at what just happened. I know the feeling.
Taylor? A sheepish voice pipes up. It belongs to Nancy, who eyes me sadly from across the room.
I'm really sorry we were watching that crap. We were trying to figure out how to say something when Rebecca caught us.
Shep sent me the link like 5 seconds before you got home,
Robin adds, glancing at Rebecca.
We weren't laughing about it, I swear.
Rebecca and I each respond with a nod. I'm not quite sure I believe them, but at least they apologized. After Charlotte dismisses everyone, Abigail gets my attention, weaving her way through the room.
Taylor, wait up. I want to talk, she pleads.
I've got less than zero interest in what she has to say. She chose this one moment to grow a conscience and do the right thing. Good for her, but I'm not giving her a pat on the back for it. We aren't friends. Instead, I rush up the stairs with Sasha. Rebecca disappears into her room. I wish I knew better how to comfort her, but the minute Sasha and I are alone, I catch a glimpse of myself in the mirror. I remember it's my birthday and that Connor is on his way over. He'll be here any minute, and I'm a fucking mess from the inside out.
I can't do this, I mutter, stumbling into Sasha's bathroom to wipe the makeup from my face.
So let's get the hell out of here, she says, standing in the doorway. Tell Connor to meet us at your place with some liquor, and we'll stay in and get loaded.
No, I mean, I can't see him.
The idea of facing him after this has me feeling queasy again, like the slightest nudge could send me hugging the toilet.
Do you want me to call him, say you're sick or something?
Our eyes meet in the mirror. Reading my face, Sasha's expression sobers.
Are you going to tell him?
Tell him what? That I'm now a trending topic on one of the world's most popular porn sites? That when he tells his mom and stepdad about me, they can go online and see my tits? That every one of my mom's Rate My Professor reviews will now include a link to her daughter? Bile rises in my throat as panic once again attacks my insides. Oh my fucking God,
This is going to affect my entire life. What happens when elementary school principals and parents get a look at Ms. Marsh and her famous rack, and I'm banned from every school district across the country because a woman's body is more dangerous than a hand grenade?
Taylor?
I push Sasha's hand off me and lunge for the toilet again, where I kneel there, dry heaving. I didn't choose this, to be put on display, to be the object of humiliation. The thought of Connor having to deal with it too makes me want to cry again. His teammates will see the video, spank it under the covers, then smirk every time they see me, hang screenshots in the locker room. He doesn't deserve to have a fucking embarrassment. No, a joke for a girlfriend. And then what? He'll forever have to keep defending me? Keep being infinitely patient and understanding during the numerous freakouts I now envision in my future? I can't live like that. Constantly feeling like everyone I meet is seeing me naked and knowing I'm embarrassing my boyfriend even if he pretends otherwise. I can't. I can't see him anymore. I fucking can't. Take me home, I say, rising on wobbly legs. I'll text him on the way. Sasha nods. Whatever you need. Once I've gathered my things, we head downstairs, but the universe hates me, so I'm not surprised to discover that Connor is early. He's striding up the darkened driveway as we open the door, dressed in a sharp black suit, somewhere behind an enormous flower arrangement. I never get tired of seeing him all pressed and polished. He's like sex personified, a walking fantasy. And I'm walking away. He smiles when he sees me, then notices my rumpled state and gives a sheepish look.
Shit, you're not ready. I'm sorry, I should have done another couple laps.
He's adorable when he's excited, and here I am about to take him out back with a shotgun.
I was getting a little over-anxious, but I can wait.
I'm sorry, I say. I have to cancel. The words come out in someone else's voice, distant and strange. I feel myself shutting down even as I stand under the lights of the house. My mind is peeling away from my body, recoiling from everything.
Why? What happened?
He sets the huge flower arrangement on the ground and tries to reach for me, but I step out of his grasp. If I let him touch me, my resolve will crack. I'm not strong enough to withstand Connor Edwards' touch.
Taylor, what's wrong?
The hurt in his eyes is immediate and gutting. I can't form the words. I remember how frustrated I was last month when he wasn't communicating with me, and yet here I am, doing the same thing. But his shit was righted by the simple act of telling his family the truth, removing himself from Kai's influence. My shit isn't going away. The truth won't help a goddamn bit because the internet is fucking forever. How the hell do I ask him to tie himself to that bullshit long term? He's been so patient and encouraging already. But this is too much for anyone to handle. It's too much for me. I see the alarm on his face, and I know what comes next. The pain, the betrayal. I don't want to do this to him. He deserves better and probably always has. We were a mess from the start, and maybe it's fitting it should be just as messy at the end. He won't understand, but he'll get over it. They always do. I'm sorry, Connor. It's over.
39. Connor. This isn't funny, because she has to be messing with me, right? Some sick idea of a joke. In lieu of presents, I will be scaring the shit out of you. Taylor, stop. I'm serious, she says, looking at her feet. I came up to the Kappa house to find her acting suspiciously, like she was making an escape, bag slung over her shoulder. She looks worn out, ragged, and if I didn't know better, I'd think she was hungover. Yet there's a coldness about her, her expression hard and impassive, as if my Taylor isn't even in there anymore. Listen, I'm sorry, but you're just going to have to accept it.
This is over.
She shrugs. I've got to go. Like hell it is. Talk to me, I order. She's got Sasha with her, and they start walking toward a red car parked on the side of the house. I leave the flowers behind to follow them because she's not pulling this shit today. You're seriously breaking up with me? On your birthday? The fuck is that, Taylor?
I know this is shitty, she says, walking fast and refusing to look at me. But it's the way it has to be, just... I'm sorry.
I don't believe you. I step in front of her, needing her to look me in the eyes and tell me the truth. I notice Sasha trying to edge away from us, but Taylor glances over in panic and Sasha stops. She stands a few feet away but doesn't leave.
It doesn't matter what you believe, Taylor mutters.
I love you. And yesterday I would have said she loved me too. Something's happened. Just tell me what it is. If someone said something to make you think
it was a fling, Connor, it's run its course. You'll bounce back.
Her gaze drops to the pavement.
We both got in over our heads.
What does that even mean? This woman is fucking infuriating. I feel like I'm losing my mind. Everything up is down and left is right. It makes no sense that yesterday she was in my bed and today she's practically running at the side of me. I was in this for real. I am in it, and I know you were too. Why are you lying?
I'm not lying.
Her indignation is far from compelling, and the more she feeds me this bullshit, the less I can remember why I'm still standing here like a jackass, getting my heart stomped on.
Whatever you want to call it.
A relationship, I growl. It's a fucking relationship.
Well, not anymore.
She sighs, and at this point I'd believe she didn't give a shit about me if it weren't for the fact that I know her better than she'd like to admit.
The semester is ending anyway. You're going back to California, and I'm going home to Cambridge, so the long-distance thing never works.
I wanted you to come stay with me. Already cleared it with Max and my mom. I shake my head in frustration. They were excited to meet you, T. My mom was redecorating one of the spare bedrooms for you.
Yeah, well...
She fidgets, eyes bouncing from the ground to the road. Anywhere but me.
I don't know where you got the idea I wanted to spend the summer with your parents. I never said yes.
Taylor isn't a cruel person. She doesn't treat people like this, even me. Even when I was breaking her heart because I was too afraid to face her. She isn't this heartless. And yet, why are you doing this? This act, this facade she's put on is nothing like the person I've known for the past few months. If this is about the whole thing with Kai, I'm sorry. I thought we'd...
Maybe you guys should take the night to sleep on it and talk again tomorrow.
Sasha cuts in, her attention trained on Taylor. I don't know Sasha well, but even she is giving off a sketchy vibe. Taylor moves to go around me, so I block her path. She glares at me, not with anger, but something that resembles defeat. Just level with me, Taylor. This is exhausting, and I don't know how else to get through to her, to break through this barrier she's erected between us. Even the first night we met, I never felt this distant from her, as if she's looking past me, invisible, irrelevant. You owe me that much. Just tell me the truth.
I don't want you as a boyfriend, okay? Are you happy now?
The gun was loaded that time. Bullet goes right through my chest.
Like, seriously, Connor, you're a great guy and you're good looking, but what else do you have going on? You have no idea what you want to do with the rest of your life. You have no ambition, no plan or prospects. And that's fine for you. You can live in your parents' house and hang out on the beach for the rest of your life. Well, I want more for myself. It was fun, but next year we'll be seniors and I'm ready to grow up. You're not.
At that, she grabs Sasha's hand and pushes past me. This time I let her go, because finally she hit the nail on the head, what I've always known and hoped she'd ignore. They were on two different paths. Taylor is bright and motivated. She'll accomplish whatever she sets her mind to. I'm a fuck-up, a perennial drifter carried on the current with no aim or drive of my own. Sasha's car pulls out down the driveway and disappears around the corner. A pang of loss stabs me square in the gut. A deep, buried memory of pain breaks the surface. A child's memory of being in a darkened room, crying, alone and unconsoled. It was the first time I realized I had no father, when I was truly old enough to understand that it was something other kids had, but not me. Not because he died, but because we weren't good enough. I wasn't good enough. Abandoned, disposable, garbage. It was bound to happen. That moment Taylor woke up and realized she was out of my league. That she'd been too quick to forgive me for running out on her over Kai. I'd kept her hanging and waiting too long to figure out my feelings for her. I waited too long to make my intentions clear and define our relationship. I was selfish to think she needed me, wanted me, enough to be patient. I took her for granted because no one had ever made me feel as comfortable and accepted as she did. No one had ever given me that sense of self-worth before she did. And now the best thing that's ever happened to me just drove away.
40. Taylor. I only watch shows with British accents now. It's like going on vacation without having to put on pants. On Friday, I skipped class. It was just a review anyway. Turned off my phone and dove into my to-be-watched list that has languished for months. When that failed to adequately distract me, I signed up for about a dozen streaming free trials. My takeaway thus far is that serial killers are rampant in quaint country villages. Also, dating shows are better with accents, too. Although one thing I've noticed is the severe lack of excessive drinking on their reality programming. I mean, how are people supposed to start throwing chairs and breaking shit if they're sober all the time? They do love their lip fillers and hair extensions, though. I like the one who says, "fit" a lot, I tell Sasha over speakerphone while I watch a show that's essentially Tinder, except they all live together. And they call girls birds. I feel like it's still the 50s in just Cuba and England. "Uh-huh," Sasha says with boredom in her voice. "Have you showered today?" Clearly, she doesn't appreciate sophisticated television. "It's Saturday," I tell her. "Do we not shower on Saturdays now?" Always so judgy. Water doesn't grow on trees, you know. After Sasha drove me home from the Kappa House Thursday night, I got in my sweats, went to the couch, and watched British Cottage Murder Detective Priest while eating an entire box of Cheerios before falling asleep in the same position, waking up this morning, getting more cereal delivered, and resuming my viewing schedule. This will be my life now. With Instacart and online classes, who needs to leave the house? "It's the end of the semester," I add. "Isn't this what college students are supposed to do? Lie around in a nest of our own molting skin, watching TV and gorging on processed foods?" "Not since millennials all got startups, Taylor." "Well, I'm an old soul." "You're hiding," she says sharply. "So? So what? Aren't I allowed? I was dragged out in the middle of the student union, stripped and ogled by the entire campus. That's how it feels anyway. So fucking sue me if all I want to do is lock myself inside and escape into other people's lives for a while." "So you were violated," she starts, her tone softening. "I'm aware. Thanks. Don't you want to do something about it? We can get the video taken down,